To live your dreams is one thing. To make them happen through hard work, that's quite another story. Pete Brottingham had a life goal. It started with a couple of Boundary Waters winter camping trips and ended with a big move to Minnesota and a big career change. One that led Pete to engineer very special gear for those of us who love life outdoors. I'm Bill Shirk. I fish, I hunt, I camp, and I tell stories. Welcome to the Minnesota Bound Podcast, the stories behind the stories. Pete Brottingham is my guest today, and you are checking in from up north, Pete. You know, our ice is gone in many parts of the Twin Cities. How are things up in northern Minnesota?
Well, just like most of the state, this winter is a little different than most. We have about 10 to 12 inches of variable ice and no snow.
So, and you've been out on the ice quite a bit.
That's correct, Bill. I've been out on the ice almost every weekend. I spend a lot of time out there.
Not as an ice angler, though. Your approach to winter is a little bit different. You like to camp.
I love to camp. The winter camping, traveling around, exploring different parts of the Superior National Forest and the Boundary Waters really does take up most of my weekends. Sometimes I fish, but yeah, you're right. That's my main focus is to travel and camp.
And this comes off a big move you just made up to Minnesota. We're going to talk more about that a little bit. But the point of this is you've had a career change and you are running a small business now called Brottingham Expedition Works. What's that all about?
So when I started Brottingham Expedition Works, it started with a dream, not even really a dream. So I started just making my own gear about a decade ago. And I have a bunch of friends that are in my circle that I really am dear to and think highly of. And they motivated me and pushed me. They're like, hey, you know, maybe you should start making this for others. And I was making it for them. And one thing led to another. I started this business in June of 22 to just kind of share my ideas with the rest of the world, essentially.
What kind of stuff?
So I started out making some of the easier things like utensils and some of the small titanium wares like tweezers, things I saw little corners in the market that I needed and that others may need. And then that allowed me to have some time to develop my saw, which I've been working on my saw for the last couple of years. And I make other wood stove accessories and accoutrements. I make ice anchor drivers, basically tools that allow you to get out and winter camp further, deeper in the backcountry. Weight's always a concern. A high degree of engineering, but yet simple. That's always been my main focus.
And stuff that applies to elk camps, summer camps, expedition camps.
That's correct.
All kinds of applications.
So my saws and a lot of my backpacking gear goes across many markets. For instance, my saw is... it's a food safe saw. And I offer that with a big game blade that allows big game hunters out in, out west or in Canada and the Rockies area where weight is a concern, where you're going up and down hills and mountains by backpack and you've got to carry everything in and out. And I offer a blade system that works with both wood and then the big game that allows more than one use on the saw. I think it's not truly revolutionary, but it's something that's I believe is a big deal to a lot of people that weight's concerned.
It is, and we're going to talk more about that in a little bit. But first, I kind of want to go back in time with you. Where did you grow up? What kind of kid were you?
Ooh, that's a good question. So I grew up in Central Illinois as a overweight kid that played sports, mostly football, baseball, that sort of thing. Visited the local creek and the river almost every day, playing down there. My dad was an outdoorsman. My brothers were outdoorsmen. We just did a lot of hunting and fishing. We camped a lot in state parks. We went up to northern Wisconsin often to go fishing and camping up there as well. Just kind of grew up doing that. I've always had the mindset of designing and building things, even at a very young age. I was always designing and modifying certain pieces of garage equipment. My dad was always, sometimes frustrated with the amount of tools I was using and where they'd be laying in the yard whenever I was done using them at the time. But I was always in the shop. I was always outside. So that's not changed one bit, I think, from now. So
you leave home. Do you go to college or do you go right to work?
I've been to college for machine tool technology, for being the tool and die maker back in Central Illinois. And then some engineering, mechanical engineering, and then ultimately to be a better tool designer in my professional field.
Which I'm intrigued by this, led you eventually to the Department of Defense.
That's correct. So I worked for the DOD there at the Rock Island Arsenal. Love that place, still do. I was a tool designer there, and then ultimately a tool design supervisor. It was a great place to work. It was a wonderful challenge. There were certain things built there that was a nice challenge for anyone that worked there, either deadline or quality.
Yeah, it's a big facility down on the Mississippi River, down on the border of Illinois and Iowa. And what sort of stuff was being produced there?
Anything that the Army or the DOD needed, everything from, say, armor to soft goods like tarps and what have you, and anything in between. I can't really say specifically, but we at the DOD, it's the nation's insurance policy. Anything that the DOD needed, the Arsenal was there to help.
That's awesome. And then at some point while you're working there, did you start winter camping?
I did. I had a supervisor that was two levels above me. He was quite the avid outdoorsman. And we got to talking one time, and he invited me to a winter camping trip back in 2010, 11. I can't remember exactly, but... ever since that one trip, I was hooked. I mean, I had the canvas tent, the steel four-dog stove. I was like, whatever this is, I'm all about it. And I've been hooked ever since, and I don't really stop halfway on anything.
So where did you go on that first trip? Were you camping down there? Did you go someplace else?
We went to the winter camping rendezvous in February, back when it was held in Birchwood, Wisconsin. It was a nice cold weekend. I want to say it was probably a high of 10. I didn't have any of the gear. I really wasn't quite sure what to expect. And ever since that one trip, yeah, it's been nuts.
Yeah, it just, what is it about winter camping that just gets inside you? There's something that just hooks us.
It really does. I think it's half. I'm going to talk in halves, in four halves, because I know math works well here. I think half of it is no bugs. You have an added layer of challenge with your gear and skill set. For some people, it's kind of the unknown and how to be in that challenge of being comfortable in these temperatures. And then the other bit of challenge is it's just nice to slow down a little bit, say traveling by foot across the lake. You can really cover some ground in a boat or a canoe. But to travel by foot, pulling a toboggan, it's nice to slow down, take the big picture in, and deal with all these little challenges.
All right. We got to take a break and thank some of the sponsors. But when we come back, I want to talk about the move. You decided you just had to come to Minnesota. Can we talk about that when we come back?
Sounds good.
Awesome. Pete Rodigam is my guest today on the Minnesota Bound podcast. And you know, we have so many sponsors that help us get to you each week. I want to thank a few of them. Up first today, our friends at Kinetico Water. It's been that sort of winter. No snow, very little cold, not a lot of time on the ice or the ski slopes. And for those of us who winter camp, it's been a little bit frustrating. So I've spent a lot of my winter coaching youth hockey. And it's funny because the Shirk boys still never leave home without grabbing their water bottles and filling them with Kinetico water. We have Kinetico's whole home water system, both at home and also another at the cabin. We also install Kinetico's K5 drinking water systems. And let me tell you, it makes a big difference. It's crazy to think that water can have such an impact. The Kinetico installations were quick and easy. No more stinky, foul well water. We have Kinetico's soft water and the K5 drinking water. No more bottled water, just great drinking water right out of the K5 tap. Our laundry no longer smells funny, and Kinetico water cleaned up the showers and the dishes. The world's most efficient, worry-free water system. Visit Kinetico.com to find a dealer near you and join the Kinetico family. Also, we would like to thank Lakes Gas.
Hey there, Bill Shirk, the man about the woods. Propane, it's clean, efficient fuel produced right here in the United States. Schedule your propane service with a friend. Lakes Gas, a family-owned provider serving the upper Midwest for more than 60 years. 54 convenient locations in Minnesota and Wisconsin, now with offices in North Dakota and South Dakota, too. Lakes Gas employees live in the communities they serve, so you can expect personalized service from professionals. Oh, and the Lakes Gas offers competitive pricing without all the extras that tend to drive up fuel prices. Safe, dependable service. Lakes Gas, the right choice for your home, business, or farm. Visit lakesgas.com and join the family.
We'd also like to give a big shout out to our good friends at Star Bank.
Hi, everybody. Ron Shera here again with another nifty story, this one about my favorite bank, the story of Star Bank. There's 10 of them in Minnesota, but here's where the plot thickens. A Star Bank is more than money. A Star Bank cares about its customers, cares about the community, whether it's town parades or the kids' baseball team. Why? Because Star Banks are locally owned. They treat you right. Quite a tale, wouldn't you say? How do I know? Because Star Bank is also our bank at Ron Shera Productions. Just another story with a happy ending. Star Bank, the bank that cares. Member FDIC. To learn more online, go to star.bank.
Pete Brodigam is my guest today, and Pete was working as an engineer of sorts at the Department of Defense facility in Rock Island, Illinois. His free time was spent up in Minnesota doing a bunch of winter camping trips in the Boundary Waters. And Pete, at some point, something clicked for you. It is hard to walk away from the place you live and the job you love, but you made the decision to do both and come north. Like, how do you take that leap?
Oh, okay, so that was not without risk. I still love where I used to work. I miss the people there. I miss my family. I miss my friends back home. It was quite the process. First thing is I realized that I had something that would, let me back up. So we've always wanted to move to Minnesota for the past decade. Just didn't know how.
We being you and your wife.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, my wife and I, Jordan. We both had the dream to move up here, just didn't know the logistics. It was more or less a pipe dream. We were both working successful positions locally there in the Quad Cities, Illinois, Iowa area. And it was on the shelf. And when I started this business, Brodigam Expedition Works, I saw, okay, so maybe this is something. I was working both for the DOD and making titanium goods. And I thought maybe we make the next step or take the next step and full time this. And so my wife got a pretty significant raise. She was able to support both of us at the same time, allow me to resign from my position at the DOD and full time this this endeavor without making an income starting out. Because starting out in a small business, it's a big change compared to, you know, working for a large facility. So we had that figured out. And then one thing led to another. At the DOD, I was in a leadership training. And one thing really clicked that trying to figure out what was most important in life. And I realized then and there over the summer of 22 that this is something that I need to do. I'm not getting any younger. I'm at an age where I think it was a worthwhile investment to move up north, which every winter I was taking 7 to 8 trips, 10-hour drives to get up to the Boundary Waters. And lack of a better term, we kind of laughed and we thought it was a cost avoidance, or it was more cost effective to live closer so I wouldn't have to travel to the Superior National Forest so often and burn so much fuel. So yeah, that was the logistics on how and then why was, you know, to really stake my flag up here and really get to know the area more and make better products that are born out of the, you know, northern Minnesota.
And you and I talked a little bit before this podcast, but you were on a winter camping trip when you found the place where you wanted to live. Is that correct?
That's correct. So I always pass through, you know, St. Louis County and up here in northern Minnesota to get to the Boundary Waters and Superior National Forest. It was just on the list of the counties to live in 10 years ago. And Jordan and I both laugh still today that we can't believe we made this happen. And it's such a beautiful area. The climate and scenery is much different than what I'm used to. And I like the change. I really do. Everything seems to be a little harder, you know, but I enjoy that. And I really, really kind of seek that out sometimes.
And you've become a ranger. living on the Iron Range.
I have, yes. It's interesting up here. I do like it. It's I would say it's practically the end of the road when it comes to running a metal manufacturing shop. Any farther north, I would things would be more difficult for shipping or deliveries. But it's about the best balance that I can find, being close enough to where I love and far enough away to where civilization still kind of exists.
All right. We need to thank a few more sponsors, but when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the shop, what you're making specifically for people who like to get outdoors, and then talk about the future a little bit. Can we do that?
Absolutely.
Awesome. I am Bill Shirk, the man about the woods, and you are listening to the Minnesota Bound podcast, the stories behind the stories. Pete Brodigam is my guest today, proprietor of Brodigam Expedition Works, and a guy who loves to get outdoors when temps drop well below zero. So many sponsors help us get to you each week. We would like to thank a few of those. Up first, our friends at the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources.
There's nothing quite like Minnesota winter. Whether you want to try ice fishing, ice skating, or ice boating, make sure you know the risks and how to play it safe on the ice. Measure ice thickness frequently and never go out alone. Always wear your life jacket or a float coat and have ice picks readily accessible in case you fall through. Playing on the ice can be fun, but it's never 100% safe. Learn how you can play safe before you go out. Safety is always in season. A message from the Minnesota DNR.
Also, a shout out to your boat club.
Got the winter blues? Start planning your summer. Plan on fun and get out in the water with your boat club. Your boat club offers boat club memberships and daily rentals with access to over 40 bodies of water and over 400 brand new boats to enjoy. Whether you want to cruise on a pontoon, create waves in a speedboat, or reel in a big one on a fishing boat, your boat club has got you covered. Unlimited boating memberships are available now, starting at just $1.99 a month after a one-time initiation. Life is better on the water. Find out more today at yourboatclub.com.
We'd also like to thank the Minnesota Horse and Hunt Club.
If you haven't experienced all that the Minnesota Horse and Hunt Club has to offer, you're missing out. Located in Prior Lake, Minnesota, with pheasant hunting and dog training 30 minutes from the Minneapolis Metro, the Horse and Hunt Club has full memberships available now and so much to offer. Besides upland bird hunting year-round, they're open 7 days a week. Trigger's Bar and Grill has awesome food and great drink specials. Sunday brunch is always a favorite. Plus, live music and events are going on all the time. Bring your friends and try one of the heated sporting clay stands this winter. Go to horseandhunt.com for more information.
Okay, so Pete, you and your wife settle on a nice little country estate up in northern Minnesota. I was lucky enough to be up there last week with photojournalist Pete Herman Franz, and we were documenting your story for a couple of our television shows. I was intrigued by your shop. Anytime you walk into a cool crafting shop, there are all kinds of little trinkets and tools and machines. And what intrigued me about your place is you've got a lot of vintage machines, classic machines.
Yep, that's right. So most of my machinery, except for a couple pieces, were made right here in the Midwest. That most of these machines were born out of an era where stamping reigned king back in the mid-50s and older. So one of my newer machines is still 50 years old. They seem to keep on ticking. They're easily repairable, and they just have a lot of soul to them. Like, yeah, I bought these obviously used, and it's just nice having a piece of heavy old iron that's easily repairable.
And just bulletproof. They're machines that just work.
Yeah, they were machines that were made to be repaired, not thrown away.
All right, so in your shop, you're making all kinds of camping utensils, you know, Of course, the new hand saws, just all kinds of stuff. But you have this passion for a metal called titanium. Why is that?
So titanium, to me, is one of the materials that I picked to be the main focus. For one, I'm used to working with that in a previous career. You don't ever have to paint it. I don't like painting things. Having to not mess with that nonsense. So that was easy to pick. And then ultimately, it's a very clean material. It's inert, especially with utensils and cookingware where you can't taste the metal in your mouth because it doesn't give off any of that. It's just pure. It's a wonderful material to work with. I kind of have a love-hate relationship with it. But to me, it's one of the best materials you can have in the outdoor industry because of the strength-to-weight ratio.
Yeah, it's feather light.
It is. It's 40% lighter than steel, yet with some of the alloys that I work with is stronger than steel. So, yes.
So for tucking gear in and having it on your pack or in a pulk sled and going off the grid, it's just really lightweight.
Yeah, it's a high-performance material, cuts down pack weight, nothing ever rusts. It's just there trip after trip.
All right, so your big build right now are these hand saws. And although we don't have video to work with, it's pretty simple to say, look, when you go to the woods, you have a hand saw with. I'm talking about a bow saw, something like you might see people in the city who go to cut down a Christmas tree, or somebody who does a little trimming. For those of us in the woods, it's, you know, what we use to get our fires. And you have sort of reinvented old technology. Why the need?
So everything I've designed and manufactured is out of a need. And the bow saw market was, there was no folding bow saw on the market that fit a 36-inch blade. So my 36-inch folding bow saw was the pilot. That's where every saw was designed around. I wanted a saw, and the circle of friends that I'm with, we wanted a saw that worked with a 36-inch blade because it feels more ergonomic. Feels nicer, you know, to cut with two people. And so, yeah, that was the beginning of it, was to make a 36-inch saw because no one else did. And then I've made other options because I really like to backpack and I like to, you know, process big game with one. So it made sense to make a range of sizes because not everybody's the same. But the 36-inch was the main need. And then another need was that aluminum saps the heat out of your hand. Titanium doesn't. In the deep cold, it's nice that you don't feel the cold through your gloves like you do on an aluminum saw. And then ergonomics and cutting capacity. I increased the cutting capacity because my frames are so strong that I can cut up to a 11.5-inch log with the 36-inch in without turning it around. So that's a main point to design this saw and how it came to be. Another one was no cam. You know, I really strive for simplicity, yet have a higher degree of engineering in a lot of my products. And this saw was no different. So in order to make it simple and make it light and make it last a really long time, I use a true hinge with no cams, and it's a self-tensioning bow saw.
Yeah, and it's awesome, right? You can throw it into a pulk sled and haul it 10 hours into the Boundary Waters. You can throw it in the back of a float plane for remote trips. Forest Service work, the elk crowd, the Western hunting crowd going to elevation to use as a bone saw. also to have as firewood. Like it's a technically advanced saw, which sounds crazy, but it's amazing.
Thank you. Yes. It is a high performance, top of the line folding bow saw that's ever been developed, I think. I may be a little biased, but my specifications, speak for themselves.
Well, when a guy goes from the Department of Defense and starts making saws, you can just imagine the mindset that goes into a project like that. And then you transition all the way over to some of your simplest tools, like the spork.
Yeah. I took what I saw on the market, and I was getting sauce on my gloves when winter camping. So I made it a little longer. I added some grip. I took what I thought was the best idea for the tines on the end of the spork. And then I add a little color. So I do a food safe anodizing process on some of my eating wares, because there isn't enough color in a lot of our products out there in the outdoor industry. And that's how that came to be. And it's lighter, longer. I mean, it still works as a spork, is just like any other spork, but I just kind of pushed that performance envelope just a little bit further.
And this is what you do now.
Yeah. So what's that?
I was going to say, you get up, you walk out of the house with a cup of coffee, and you go to the shop and you start working.
I do. So I get up, say hi to the wife, have a cup of coffee, and then I'll go out to the shop until I'm tired. Some days that's until 2 p.m. Some days that's until 11:30 at night, especially when I've got an idea and I'm prototyping something for an upcoming trip. My mind just goes, and not all of them see the light of day, really, the ideas. So I have a few duds out there, but I really try to push the envelope and think outside the box as much as possible. And it's also, I get a lot of my ideas with a lot of help from friends and family as well.
I want to talk about one other aspect of your story, if you are comfortable talking about it. And I think it is such a wonderful transition. You mentioned earlier, as a kid, you were a little bit overweight, but it sounds like you had a moment that changed you when you were in the Boundary Waters on one of your winter trips. Are you willing to talk about that?
Sure, absolutely. It's kind of wild to do something like this, or at least even attempted at the weight I used to be. So I used to weigh my max weight back in 2009. I tipped the scales on a shipping scale at 440 pounds. And I knew then and there I needed to do something. I know everyone's rock bottom's a little different, but my rock bottom was 440. And then I started to lose some weight. I moved up to the Quad Cities in Illinois, and I was about 380, 390 pounds, taking my first solo winter camping trip after my trip up to Birchwood. And I was pulling a 215-pound toboggan about 5 miles into the Boundary Waters, up 4-mile portage. And I was on 60-inch snowshoes. I mean, I was on the biggest stuff you could really get. And I was struggling so hard to stay afloat on top of the snow, just absolutely exhausted, just gassed. And it was a solo trip, right? So I had 4 days to reflect. And one thing led to another. I just kind of had an epiphany. It's like, if I want to keep doing this, I've got to get the weight down. So after getting back from my trip, I started cycling to work, eating right, and I lost another 100 pounds.
Wow.
And then, so I was doing well, but I still needed to go further. And then I had help with the bariatric clinic there locally in the Quad Cities, and had gastric bypass weight loss surgery, which posed its own challenges, but it is a wonderful tool that has helped me get much further in the backcountry. Now I can do 40, 50 miles, no problem. And in just a few days, pulling a toboggan, I still exercise regularly. But getting down to a normal weight that, that snowshoes and outdoor gear works. There's a limit to a lot of this stuff because it's outside of their design, parameters. So now I'm in a range where the outdoor gear works well. And, now I can enjoy my trips much more, at a healthier weight.
Is that a little bit of your love of the Boundary Waters, that the place means so much to you that it changed your life that way?
It did. It was not only, so the Boundary Waters needs to be seen from within. Seeing it from the entry points or just a mile or two in doesn't do that place justice. It's such a special place to me. I knew I needed to do something. It was me, not the wilderness. So I had to look within, fix myself, get myself ready for this type two fun, which is winter camping, and really enjoy to really enjoy it in the wintertime. Yeah, I had to get the weight off. And then also too, if it wasn't for the nice circle of friends that I have here in Minnesota, none of this would have been possible as well.
It just takes a lot of support.
It really does. It took support from my family, friends that were really pushing me to be better. It's nice surrounding myself around people that do want to push people to be better and to, you know, just be healthier and live longer. So, yeah.
Well, that is such a great part of your story. You know, life is full of risk, right? And a lot of people will never take the opportunity to jump. And you and Jordan did that. You left jobs. Sorry, I should say you left careers. You left home. And you just tackled what you wanted in this world. And you're kind of living the dream now.
I really am. I looked that my priorities before are not the priorities that probably everyone should have. And you don't get any do-overs. So knowing that, there was no better time. Scared out of our minds, you know, of the unknown. But I tell you what, I still can't believe we live up here.
So amazing. All right. So, Pete, if people want to check out your gear, where do they find you?
So I have, I can sell in person, but I do have a website, bewgear.com. I sell everything on that website. I sell at a few trade shows. So yeah, bewgear.com, Bridegum Expedition Works. I can take orders by phone as well. And I usually ship within the next day or two internationally as well.
Am I allowed to ask what's next as far as new gear you might be working on? Come on, give us a hint.
It has to do with titanium, probably. I have so many different things in the works. I don't think I'm going to tell you. So you're going to have to see. But I do have a few more things, especially for the summer backpacking crowd, specifically adapter types. For stoves that are like the isobutane stove type kits out there. And then maybe a new saw or two. that's beyond my line of saws now. So,
okay. Well, we'll stay tuned. All right. I have two questions when I wrap up the podcast that I like to ask my guests. The first one, and geez, maybe we even talked about it. Is there a moment in your life outdoors that changed you? Just a moment in time you look back to and say, wow, that was just incredible. What was that moment for you?
I would have to say one of the more recent trips was my solo winter trip around into Basswood, and I went through the ice. That was one of the trips that kind of changed me on how I look at our own safety, our own mortality, and of course, our first responders as well. So I didn't need any of that first responder, but that was one of the trips that really kind of changed how I look at things.
What were you pulling a sled? What happened?
Yeah, I went through a beaver run, thin ice area, went in negative 17. I was by myself and I was 2 days away from the truck. That was kind of, it turned into an inconvenience, but it could have easily been a survival situation. I mean, I was wet. I was cold. I got out, but being on trail by yourself, you have a lot of time for self-reflection. And yeah, that was one of the moments in my life that really, really changed the way I thought about things.
You got fire going to dry out?
I did. I jumped in my bag for the first couple hours and got warm there because my bag is my lifeline. I was too cold to make a fire. And I got one. I got a fire put together. I've since then changed on how I make emergency fire kits for myself. But yeah, so I made a fire, got warm, change clothes, change boots, and set up camp not too far away because I was kind of done traveling for the day. I still couldn't shake my shivering for hours. It was pretty scary there for a while.
Well, that's quite a story, quite a moment. All right, second one. Is there a single piece of gear that you have created memories with that just means more to you than any other piece you have, whether it's a fishing rod, a backpack, a shotgun? Do you have that one piece of gear?
So I have a few things. I have an old shotgun that I have. I don't have a whole lot of sentimental or hand-me-down type pieces of outdoor gear, but one of them is a shotgun that my uncle used to own before he passed away. I have that. I really just enjoy looking at it and shooting it and hunting with it, even though my hunting has been kind of on the back burner lately, but that's one thing. And then another thing is I really don't have a whole lot of hand-me-down possessions. I really don't.
So it's the shotgun for you?
I would say it's the shotgun. Like I said, I don't get to use it as often as I'd like, but yeah, it reminds me of back home in Illinois. It reminds me of my family.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Well, thanks for taking the time today. For those of you listening, you can watch for Pete's stories coming up in both Minnesota Bound and also our regional national show called Made for the Outdoors. Just great gear and a great story behind all of it. Pete, congrats, and can't wait to see what you come up with next.
Thanks, Bill. Nice talking to you today, I'll be in the shop working.
No doubt. Well, that about does it for the Minnesota Bound Podcast, the stories behind the stories. I'm Bill Shirk, the man about the woods, and a big shout out to all the sponsors who help us out each week. Our friends at Connecticut Water, Lakes Gas, Star Bank, the Minnesota DNR, your boat club, and the Minnesota Horse and Hunt Club. Until next week, what do we always say? Don't forget to introduce a kid to the great outdoors.